That's the first of the 21 Hungarian dances for piano forehand by Johannes Brahms, as played by the duo Yara Tal and Andreas Grutheisen. And that's by way of introduction to our topic today on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Good afternoon. Ian Hobson, now officially anyway retired Swanland professor of piano at the University of Illinois, is launching one of his not exactly patented, but certainly signature traversals of complete piano works, and in this case also chamber works, of big-name composers. He's done Chopin, he's done Schumann, he's done Beethoven, and this year it's the music of Johannes Brahms, beginning with a recital tomorrow night at 7:30, instrumental music with piano. He's going to be joined by the Jupiter String Quartet, who are the new quartet in residence at the University of Illinois, also by fellow faculty member Rochelle Sennett. And the music you just heard in a slightly different version will be on an upcoming recital on the 5th of February. This is going to be quite a series, 16 concerts, I think. And my guest on Live and Local today is Ian Hobson. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I always wonder, as so many people do, I'm sure, when they hear that you're going to launch into one of these complete piano works projects, how on earth do you learn all this stuff and then pull it off in a pretty short period of time?
Well, this one is following on the heels of Chopin and Schumann. Now, Chopin, it took a long time to learn the music, I'm relatively speaking, and I just did the piano music in the first time I played it all. Last year I did Schumann, and that was particularly challenging because the music is not so well known. Much of the music is not as well known as the famous pieces,
including to you,
including to me, of course. Yeah, with Brahms, it's another matter. I mean, the chamber music, I have played all of the chamber music over the years, you know, with various groups and various people. And it's standard to the repertoire, so it's a really great music. Chamber music with piano, that is. The piano music itself is a little bit unusual. I mean, most people play the later works of Brahms, that is the collections of short pieces, the intermezzi, and the rhapsodies, perhaps, or the sets of variations, the Handel variations, the Paganini variations, are very often played. But the music that he wrote when he was young for the piano is much more orchestral than usual. That is, Brahms was kind of obsessed with the idea that he was going to write a symphony. He was a symphonist. He was interested in Beethoven. He was very knowledgeable about orchestration, about many things, music of the past, and I don't mean just Bach, I mean really earlier music. So he was a tremendously knowledgeable guy, and he wrote these piano sonatas as his first opuses, and they're very rarely played because they are like symphonies in miniature, you know. And the style of writing for the piano is orchestral, very big chords and so on. The only one that's really played a lot is the Sonata in F minor, number 3.
And when you say they're orchestral and therefore rarely played, does that imply that they are especially difficult?
Yes, in a particularly Brahmsian way. You know,
He
used to write lots of sixths, lots of octaves. The hands are doing the same thing very often. They're playing in unison with each other in very thick chords. If you just approach them as piano music, piano sonatas, like you might approach a Beethoven sonata, you won't be that successful. I think by this time in my study that I've got some idea how to how to play them, because I look back from the chamber music that I've played. And when I've played, especially Brahms chamber music, when you play with violin and with cello and clarinet and all that, and have them interact with the piano, and that's what Brahms was thinking of, even when he wasn't writing for those other instruments. I think he's definitely thinking of the timbre and the sound and the texture of these other instruments when he's writing his early piano sonatas.
So you think he was hearing violins and cellos and wind instruments?
No doubt about it, and horns, yeah.
The one of the pieces that's going to be on Wednesday's program, tomorrow night's program, which of course is launching this series, is his first, well, it's listed as his Opus 1. Does that necessarily imply that it is his first published work, the sonata, piano sonata?
It's his first published work that he published Opus 2 and Opus 4. The three sonatas are Opus 1, Opus 2, and Opus 5. And they were all written about the same time. They were all written when he was 20 years old. It's said that the Opus 2 sonata in F-sharp minor was written before the C major, the Opus 1. But there was a lot of stuff that he wrote that he just didn't care for. He rejected it and destroyed it. So this is not his, by any means, his first trial for writing piano music. I think he was satisfied with it to a large extent, because it's a very well-constructed piece.
And he destroyed these things satisfactorily enough that nobody has found traces of these other ones.
Right.
Yeah, I do remember reading years ago, I don't remember what was making me read a biography of Brahms, but that he was this ruthless critic. And would go, I don't remember if there were fits of rage over some of these things that he wrote that he couldn't believe he wrote, or at least
he didn't
want to see him anymore. And definitely didn't want people to hear them.
No, he certainly didn't want people to hear them. No, he's an enigmatic character. But following on what I said about the thinking in terms of strings or other instruments, he dedicated this sonata not to some patroness, but to Joseph Joachim,
who's a
great violinist. Yeah.
Curious.
And Brahms, before he wrote any of this stuff, went around with another Hungarian violinist and sort of improvised accompaniments to things. And so these Hungarian dances that you played are an outgrowth of that. Mm. And he was always very interested in Hungarian music and gypsy music, basically, gypsy music, rhapsodies. I think that the string nature, the kind of serenade aspect of this first sonata owes something to his work with the string players.
Well, since you've mentioned orchestral music, Beethoven was the big orchestral guy preceding Brahms and the guy who kept him mentally from writing a symphony for a long time. And you mentioned serenades. His two serenades for orchestra also preceded his first symphony because he couldn't quite bring himself to do it.
Everything that he wrote was a symphony in disguise, basically. I mean, these three sonatas, the two serenades. This first sonata has a theme and a rhythmic framework which is taken wholesale from Beethoven's sonata, Opus 106, the opening of it, the Hammerklavier Sonata, which starts da-dum, da-dum, da-da-dum, bum. And Brahms starts exactly the same way, except it doesn't have the pickup note. It just starts straight in with that rhythm. Brahms also makes the harmonic scheme like the Waldstein Sonata. The rhythms are not like the Waldstein Sonata, but the harmonic scheme of the first page is like the Waldstein Sonata. Now, I don't think that Brahms thought he was plagiarizing this stuff. He was really paying tribute. I mean, this was before he'd ever published anything, before he was just trying to experiment for himself in writing this stuff. And he played all of this music for Schumann in 1853, when Brahms was 20 and Schumann was, shortly to depart. And Schumann was very rightly incredibly impressed with Brahms' talent from these early pieces.
So here's Brahms very much under the influence of Beethoven, spiritually and directly. That's the opening of the opening movement of the first of his piano sonatas. This performance, given by Sviatoslav Richter, you can hear it played by Ian Hobson, my guest on Live and Local today. In his recital tomorrow night at 7:30, he'll be joined by some colleagues as well. More on that coming up. That's a healthy sampling of the opening movement of the Piano Sonata No. 1 by Johannes Brahms. Sviatoslav Richter performing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Ian Hobson of the University of Illinois faculty performing that complete work along with a piece for piano four hands and also a piece of chamber music by Antonín Dvořák. More about how that got onto an all Brahms program tomorrow night at 7:30 with Ian Hobson and joined by the Jupiter String Quartet and pianist Rochelle Sennett. Ian is my guest on Live and Local today. Our program is made possible with support from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. This week, experience singer Lauren Turk. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com. So the opening music of Brahms, well, the piece we just heard of Brahms, will be the center point of your program tomorrow night, I guess. And the series that you're launching on, 16 recitals, mm-hmm. you're performing with each of your fellow faculty members? Or almost.
Each of the piano faculties.
Yeah.
Yes. So this one is starting with the waltzes for four-hand piano duet. And that's with Rochelle Sennett, who's been on our faculty for the last few years. And before that, she studied, did her DMA with me immediately before that. I think she was one of the... maybe the fastest person to complete the doctorate here. She did amazingly good work and academically as well as pianistically.
How common is it, I don't think it's happened since I've been here, for somebody who finishes your program to just turn right around and join the faculty?
I would say it's fairly uncommon.
And then what about Rochelle, I mean, besides the couple of things you just mentioned, prompted you all to do that, to hire her right back?
I don't know, but everybody was very happy with this decision. And I think that it's, you know, a kind of strange thing perhaps for me to begin this series with the four hands piece. And not with the piano piece. And I told Rochelle that she's going to play the first six notes of my whole Brahms series, which is true, because she's playing the primo part, and we play it on one piano. And these... but it's really wonderfully appropriate, I think, because these waltzes, although they're short pieces, are absolutely the epitome of Brahms in his, you know... relaxed style and his deep musical message in there, hidden in these pieces, even though they're really just almost ballroom waltzes in many ways, like Johann Strauss, who Brahms admired so much.
I sort of forgot what it was just about to come out of my mouth. I've always been confused by the term piano duet. So just clarify for the listeners, when we say piano four hands and piano duet, there's generally interchangeable as
yes,
opposed
they are,
to,
they are.
But you're
I
playing
think,
on one piano.
Yes, that's exactly, that's the main point. And in this comes from England. I mean, when I grew up, if you said piano duet, that meant you were playing on one piano. And
what do you call it when you have a duet of pianos, where you're playing two players but two pianos? What do you call that?
Two piano music.
Two
So it's really the same thing, but it's very intimate. And this, so much music was written in this form, particularly by Franz Schubert. He wrote more volumes of forehand music than anything else. And if you performed, I think if you made CDs of all the Schubert forehands, somebody must have done it by now, or you know, a group of people. I think it takes 12, 16 CDs to play all of Schubert's forehand music. Brahms didn't write so much. He wrote the Hungarian dances, and he wrote the waltzes. And he wrote also the Liebeslieder waltzes, which are for piano duet and
choir.
And voices, four voices or choir. Yeah.
Love song waltzes,
yes.
Literally, I guess. So are you sort of implying that a complete Schubert piano recital series might be a long, long way off?
Forehand music.
Yeah.
Of the forehand music, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I'm sure it's all been put on disc.
I'm talking about for you.
Oh, for me.
For
not,
you,
that's
yeah.
you, that, not, you're not going to see
not
that.
Gonna, that one's not going to happen. even Ian Hobson would. That would be a large task to tackle. Well, let's hear a few of these waltzes. You'll hear there's one at least that probably everybody will recognize. Well, maybe not. I don't want to suggest that everybody's supposed to know these. We're going to start. There's 16 of them. We'll start with number 12 and might as well make it through number 16, or maybe we'll just stop at number 15, which is the kind of the famous one. In this performance, we're going back to the people we heard at the beginning of the show, Yara Tal and Andreas Grutheisen. I like their playing very much. And you'll hear Rochelle Sennett and Ian Hobson performing the complete set tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts to kick off this Brahms series. Seems kind of an enigmatic end to a long set of pieces, 16 waltzes for piano, four hands, Opus 39 by Johannes Brahms, played here by Yara Tal and Andreas Grutheisen, and it'll be played by Rochelle Sennett and Ian Hobson tomorrow night as part of half Brahms and about half, maybe not quite half, Dvorak programs who kick off an nearly all Brahms series that Ian has instigated. It's going to be at the Fullinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana tomorrow night, 7:30. Also be joined by the Jupiter String Quartet on that program. And the series will continue on this 28th of September. With another of the sonatas, the second of the sonatas, also piano trio. And then October 14th, October 27th, you can check the Krannert Center Krannert Center website for the complete schedule. It's a large series. And not only will Ian be performing the four hands music with, at various times, all of the fellow faculty members of the piano division, but also with faculty from the string division and also some of the wind division, and also even bringing back some people who used to be on faculty, or at least one person in the case of cellist Ko Iwasaki, whose name I happen to remember.
Yes, yes. He used to be on our faculty briefly, and also was on the faculty of Illinois State, I think, in the late 70s. It'll be a great pleasure to bring him back, but I think I can give more information about that later because he's not playing until the spring.
Sure.
But this the September the 28th concert, the next one, which is going to be in Smith Hall, as you said, I'm playing the second sonata, which was written first, the Opus 2 sonata. But we're also doing the first trio in B major, which has an interesting history too. That's with Stefan Milenkovic, violin, and Daniel from the Jupiter Quartet on playing the cello.
Daniel McDonough.
Yes. And this piece was heavily revised. It's Opus 8. And there is a version, there is a first version which is in existence, but is almost never played. It's the revised version from 30-odd years later, which is played, and it's still called Opus 8.
Brahms was
the version that we will be playing.
It was a inveterate, is that the right word, reviser of his own music?
Yes, usually he revised it before he published it, but in this case he revised it many, many years later.
And was that one that he then discarded? Well, he must not have discarded it entirely.
He didn't discard it entirely. It's very interesting to study the two versions. But there's such a master craftsman at work in the second one. After he's had all that experience of writing the symphonies and writing, you know, the German Requiem and everything else. And it's a very rich piece indeed.
I want to ask you about your approach in studying these pieces now. Dusty Rhodes, who writes for the University of Illinois, did an article on this series, and she quotes you as saying that having conducted all the Brahms symphonies, having played all the chamber music, I can see what genius is lurking there in his first piece for piano, which of course we've already played some of, and I have a much better idea of how to play it, unquote. And I assume you're referring not only to that piece, but also to other of the piano music of Brahms, and I wonder how that works for you. You know, how does having conducted the other pieces and played all the chamber music before, how does that work for you in revisiting this stuff?
Well, of course, I don't really know until I've done it. but I have this strong.
You do
suspicion.
Know about this coming concert?
Yes, I do.
You've got that well rehearsed.
I mean, but
by
you
now.
Know, we. It's funny, we think about Brahms as the old man because we see these pictures, as the pictures on my poster with the beard and the pot belly and, you know, reaching out with his hands to play with the cigar dangling from his lips. But we forget that he was very, very young when he wrote this stuff. I mean, I'm three times as old as he was when he wrote that sonata. And yet he always wrote, you always thought that this man is not a young man. It was almost as if Brahms was never a young man in his writing. There are a few flashes of kind of impetuosity, which you get, for example, in the first piano concerto, which is a very heaven-storming piece. But mostly, it's very wise, very exciting, very rich, very touching, but it's very difficult to imagine it being written by a young man. And so, for me, I get a better understanding of this early music, having studied the later music and in depth. Of course, Brahms couldn't do that, but he probably had it latently inside him.
Was he a good pianist? As far as we know,
he must have been a superb pianist. Later on in life, he complained that, you know, when he had to play a Mozart concerto or something like that, that he couldn't get around the scales and arpeggios anymore. But he must have been really phenomenally gifted to play these early sonatas.
You mentioned that reference to the sonatas being very orchestral, but he is, I understand, was a pretty small guy, and I wonder if
yes.
his hands were as well.
Well. It seems not. It seems that he wrote big chords and could get around, make a massive sound. And The most virtuosic piece that he wrote was the Variations on a Theme of Paganini. But that still has this use of octaves and sixths and thick textures that you don't associate with other virtuosi like Liszt or Chopin.
And since you mentioned it, that piece will be coming on the December 10th program. You're doing about three a month, two or three a month, at least for a while.
Some months, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of music to cover. Funny about the young versus old thing, because we do picture Brahms with the grizzled beard, and I remember seeing pictures of him and being startled to see him without the beard, where he looked, even as an older guy, like almost like a child. So young like a child. I wonder if the beard had to be grown, not only because he maybe thought he had a baby face, but because he was so much not a young person in his music. It just had to be part of his visual as well as musical persona. Just a thought. So how does music by Dvorak end up on an all Brahms program?
Well, this is by necessity. When I was putting together this series, of course, I wanted to play the quintet, piano quintet of Brahms. It's one of his great pieces.
And he has only one such piece.
And he has only one such piece.
For piano and strings.
But that piece exists in two versions. One for two pianos by themselves, and one for piano with a string quartet. It also existed in earlier times, in an earlier version, which was destroyed or almost destroyed, in just a string quintet version. So it grew from through various stages. The reason I'm not playing the quintet version of the Brahms piano quintet is that there's going to be a concert later on with Menachem Pressler, my mentor from Indiana University and the pianist on the Beaux-Arts Trio. He's coming back to play the Brahms Quintet with actually the Pacifica Quartet.
Was the former quartet in residence here.
And now they have gone to Indiana where he is residing. So the Kranitz Center asked me, would you mind doing something different? I mean, could you do one of the quartets or something like that instead of... and I said, well, I'm doing the quartets anyway. But because the Brahms Quintet exists in this different version for two pianos, I said, that's fine. But
so you'll do that at
I'll
some
do
point
that later, in this yeah, later in, this, in the fall. But, you know, they said, I think it was actually Edward Rath, the interim director of the school at the time, a few months ago, he said, why don't you play the Dvorak? And I said, well, that, you know, it's a bit strange because it's the one piece, it's nothing to do with Brahms. But then I thought, well, it really is a lot to do with Brahms. And since I can't, I mean, Brahms and Dvorak were very, very fond of each other's music. Brahms loved the Dvorak cello concerto, and that's why he wrote the double concerto late in his life for violin and cello. And the piano quintet of Dvorak is one of the great pieces of chamber music. And so the opportunity presented itself and to introduce the Jupiter Quartet, our new quartet in residence at the Kranitz Center, it seemed something not to be missed.
Well, it's also part of a continuum, because you already mentioned Schumann, whose piano pieces you traversed last season, who was a mentor to Brahms.
Exactly.
Brahms was largely responsible for getting Dvorak published in the first place,
as
well as other things.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I'm glad you're playing it. You've picked one of my own all-time favorite pieces of any kind, and I especially love the very opening of it, so I thought we'd hear some of that as we conclude our conversation here today. We'll be talking with you again, certainly about some of the Symphonie à la Camera concerts as they come up. Ian is a conductor of that orchestra in residence at the Kranitz Center for the Performing Arts, Chamber Orchestra. although doing a lot of big symphonic pieces this year, I notice. And then certainly we'll have him back, have you back to preview some of the other Brahms series as they continue.
I'd be delighted to do that. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And the series begins tomorrow night at 7:30 with pianist Rochelle Sennett and the Jupiter String Quartet. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our program is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine, beers, and spirits for the series Collector to the First Time Buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available on the Corkscrew's Facebook page. As it happens, the recording from which I'll play you some of Dvorak's Quintet for Piano and Strings features pianist Menachem Pressler, who will be playing the Brahms Piano Quintet later on. And he's joined here by the Emerson String Quartet and heard here on Live and Local. And as we come back into some of the opening music, we will fade away from that opening movement of the Quintet for Piano and Strings, Two Violins, Viola, and Cello by Antonin Dvorak. In this performance, we heard pianist Menachem Pressler and members of the Emerson String Quartet. All of the Emerson String Quartet, sorry. And that piece will be performed by pianist Ian Hobson with the Jupiter String Quartet tomorrow night at 7:30 in recital at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on tomorrow's program, I'll be talking briefly with pianist Emmanuel Axe, who will be giving a recital at the Kranert Center Thursday night. And on Thursday's show, this seems to be a classical piano week, I'll be talking with a former student of Ian Hobson's, who is pianist Awadajan Pratt. He is not exactly a native, but pretty close to it, of Normal, Illinois, grew up there. And his family foundation, the Pratt Foundation, is giving a benefit recital for the foundation Saturday at the Illinois Wesleyan University campus. And I'll be talking with Awadajan Pratt on Thursdays, Live and Local. Here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next few days. Tonight, the Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble will be performing at the Iron Post in Urbana, starting at 7 o'clock. The traditional jazz orchestra will play at Bouvon's in Urbana starting at 5:30, so just about 25 minutes or 35 minutes from now. There's a faculty recital at Illinois State University featuring tenor Justin Vickers. That's at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal tonight at 8 o'clock. The Chip Stevens Quartet play jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Pianist Donnie Heitler plays as he does every week at the Great Impasta in Urbana tomorrow evenings at 6 o'clock. Gordy Wilson has a weekly piano gig at Boltini Lounge in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. It's the weekly traditional Irish music session, at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 8:30. The Gunny Sack Review of Bluegrass and Gospel Music is at the Yoder Center in Arthur tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. The Illinois Modern Ensemble, formerly known as the New Music Ensemble at the University of Illinois, gives a concert Thursday evening at 7:30 at the Kranert Center in Urbana. The Heartland Theater Company presents These Shining Lives at their theater in Normal Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30, with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The Jim Markham Swing Band is at Clinton Square in Clinton Thursday night at 7 o'clock. The David Mayfield Parade is performing at the Castle Theater in Bloomington Thursday night at 7 o'clock. And it's jazz groups at Eastern Illinois University giving a concert at the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the EIU campus in Charleston Thursday night at 7:30. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We'll go out with music that will be on Ian Hobson's second recital of this Brahms series. This comes from the Piano Trio Trio Number 1, where he'll be joined by violinist Stefan Milenkovic and cellist Daniel McDonough. That'll be happening on September the 28th. And stay tuned after this at 5 o'clock. It's All Things Considered from NPR. In this performance, we hear pianist Arthur Rubinstein. This comes from the Vintage Archives. Violinist Henrik Schering and cellist Pierre Fournier.